Hey, some games were played, so it's time to pod about it. Welcome to Scrambled Eggs, everyone, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. I'm Joe McCann with Phil Bush. Phil, today we are going to take on the impossible task of trying to draw something from games that supposedly we're not supposed to draw any conclusions from.
Oh my God, we're going to Houston. We're amazing. Oh my God, get your Final Four tickets. We could not have been any better. That was amazing.
Calm down. Let's calm down.
What?
Calm down.
Hi. Have we started?
Welcome. Yes, we started.
Okay, good.
We started. But yes, obviously their exhibition games don't mean much necessarily, but I think there are things to be drawn from them, and that's why we're having our podcast today.
They mean something.
I mean, they're not worthless for sure. I mean, granted, we are not booking Final Four tickets yet.
We're not.
But, yeah. Well, you can. All I'm right. Not.
Fine.
But even though Houston's just a five-hour drive from where I live in Dallas. But we're going to take a look at the games that Marquette played recently in Italy on their little European tour over there and maybe address a few other Marquette news items as well as the podcast goes along. But, Phil, I think I just want to kind of just take some instant serious reactions from the four games Marquette recently played in Italy. I tried to catch as many as I could. I was on the road for some work and some vacation over the last 2 weeks, but I was able to catch a few of the games online. It was awesome to catch games on YouTube. That was really cool. I'm glad they were able to do that and show us something. What maybe some of your initial takeaways from what we saw from Marquette in Italy?
Well, my initial takeaways were, especially given, and we'll get to it with the schedule instances, I was concerned about what Wojo was seeing out of this team early, and that it seems that that concern is unfounded. It kind of, the players we thought would be good were good, if not better. And the players where we had the biggest question marks, a.k.a. Tracy Carter, the engine, we got a much more pleasant result out of than we otherwise absolutely as a freshman and made some freshman mistakes, but certainly showed a lot of potential, a lot more, or has me a lot less concerned about the point guard position after seeing these four games than I was going into the four games.
Yeah, Thomas Bildy was the play-by-play guy who we met over there during the tour. He tried to give just about everybody a nickname on the tour. I think the one that will definitely stick is Tracy Carter as the engine. I kind of like it. I think it really has the potential to stick. See, I think that's what makes a good nickname is when you're not forcing it and like going out there, hey, what should this guy's nickname be?
Right.
Oh, it should be Scooter. Let's make it Scooter, and let's just go with that. No. Like something that just kind of happens organically that somebody throws out that they see and everybody laughs, say, oh, that's pretty good. That's what makes a good nickname. And I think the engine, he didn't force it or anything. It just kind of came out, and everybody's, especially people on Twitter, is like, the engine, that could stick.
Yeah, I will absolutely make it my personal mission to make it stick. I love it that much.
Yeah, it was really good because it makes it. Now, he threw a few other nicknames out there that I'm not sure are going to stick. He called Sandy Cohen the inspector because he has Inspector Gadget arms. Not sure that's going to hang around. Maybe. Again, other things have been forced on me that I did get used to, like Bane on Deontay Burton.
That's true.
Yeah, I don't know if Inspector's... He called Henry Ellenson the train. I'm just not going to touch that one. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's going to stick around.
Nope.
And Luke Fisher, El Capitan. I like the sentiment that he is becoming a leader. I don't know. Nothing about it.
It's
really
just, it's a complicated explanation, and any explanation that results in where you have to start the story with, well, there was this Danish announcer introducing our games, that's not a recipe for successful nicknames.
I do like the sentiment, though, that Luke is showing some leadership, because really, with no seniors on the roster, I mean,
somebody
he really is one of the
leaders. Leader.
Yeah, he has to be a leader. But anyway, so I did enjoy the nickname for Tracy Carter, because like you said, he was one guy who was really kind of an unknown, because with Marquette uncertain in the point guard position heading into this 2015-16 campaign, he was a guy who many thought had a chance to start. Excuse me, he did start all four games over there, which was good to see. And he for the most part, he played pretty well.
Yes.
I think he did earn that nickname, the engine, because as he went, he kind of helped the offense go. I thought he distributed well, he rebounded well, mm-hmm. He got to the basket for some easy shots, which was good to see as well. He didn't really take. He did shoot fairly well from three as well in a small sample size, 7 of 13. 54% overall for the trip. So I really like what I saw out of Tracy Carter. And, you know, again, small sample size against teams whose strength we really can't measure necessarily against other NCAA teams. But they weren't total garbage. And I thought he played – I kind of liked what I saw out of Tracy Carter.
Yeah, I think the thing – the two things that he kind of did that were very successful is he made some strong passes. He also made some – I don't want to make it sound too negative and say dumb passes, but you know, he made some aggressive passes that were probably ill-advised, but he was strong with the ball, and he could create an attack off the dribble. That's mm-hmm. kind of what we want out of a point guard. Defensively, I think he's got the tools there. He was still kind of gambling a lot, but that was true of the team in general.
Yeah, it appears like, you know, some of the offense and probably a lot of the defense really kind of hasn't been put in yet, so to speak. I mean, they're still working on a lot of their sets, I think, as they're kind of early mm-hmm. in the process.
Well, and they're going to, you know, focusing on the defense for a minute, especially because Tracy Carter kind of exemplified this issue within the defense. The defense is still very kind of individualistic, and, you know, you had players gambling for steals and gambling defensively, which forced other players when they missed to rotate, and that resulted in some easy baskets for the other team because the defensive rotations were constantly out of position and rebounding was a problem as a result. So I think, you know, as an example, the defense could certainly improve. They showed an aptitude and a talent, but they've got a lot of coaching yet to get installed to be really successful on defense. But I thought Tracy Carter all around, I had heard good things, and I saw nothing but positives out of him with this trip.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. And this is something I'll just touch on. I don't want to really dwell on it or really bring the kid down too much, but it's worth mentioning. I am very glad that Tracy Carter is Marquette's freshman point guard as opposed to Nick Niskowiak. Again, I'm not trying to taunt the kid or make fun of him because he's in a lot of trouble right now. If you haven't seen the headlines, he's, of course, former Marquette commit. He committed to Buzz, decommitted when Buzz left, recommitted to Wojo, and then they kind of mutually parted ways back in the spring. If you haven't seen the headlines, he's wanted on he's facing several charges in Wisconsin for reckless endangerment, operating a vehicle while intoxicated. Sounds like he's a kid who needs a lot of help. Again, I'm not trying to make fun of the kid or say I'm glad he's gone necessarily, but I from a business perspective, Wojo made the right call there, just breaking ties with him. Iowa State has now done the same. He's off Iowa State's team. And I just want to say it is sad what has happened to Nick Niskowiak.
Yeah, it's, you know, we don't need to dwell on it, but it sounds like a kid with demons, and I hope he gets the help he needs and turns this around and is successful. In life in general, I mean, I'm not even talking about basketball. I hope he can kind of pull out of this.
Yeah, I think basketball should be one of the last things he has to worry about right now. He needs to put him in a position to be a healthy person mentally.
Yes, I agree completely. But your point is well founded. You know, we kind of have Tracy Carter as a result of Nick not coming here.
Right, yeah, if they had stuck with Nick, I mean, there wouldn't have been really a reason to pursue Tracy Carter at that
right.
point.
Right, yeah, you know, and so... Did it, you know, on the surface, we definitely traded up just simply what's going on. But, you know, Tracy Carter, the thing is we can carry on about how awesome he was, and he did very well. But he's a freshman, and he showed moments in the game. Wojo yanked him out a couple of times because he made freshman mistakes, and he had teachable moments to go back and get them corrected. So, but overall... Considering we're going to have to start a freshman point guard, I think we're in okay shape.
Yeah, I agree. Just kind of moving on from that point. By the way, speaking of starting, I believe the starting lineup for all four games was what I had projected in our last podcast, not to toot my own horn or anything, but I did predict that it would be Tracy Carter, Dwayne Wilson, Sandy Cohen as the surprise at the three, and Ellenson and Fisher were the obvious ones.
Yes.
So who knows if that'll be the starting lineup opening night, because obviously Hanif Cheatham is still waiting to be cleared. From the
he
NCAA
actually is cleared
his...
now. He got cleared the last day of the tour.
Oh, well, of course he did.
Yes.
Thanks, NCAA. Working on no one's timeline but your own.
Yes.
I know that was a bummer for Wojo because he wanted Cheatham to play, of course.
Well, I was really curious to see how he – because every statement is he's going to play at the one, and I was really curious to see how that worked out. But
So that'll be something else we'll have to wait and see until Marquette's first exhibition game, which will be against the oldest Ellenson's team, Valley City State. I want to say Fort Valley. It's Valley City State, which is where the oldest Ellenson plays. But as far as the youngest Ellenson, I sure enjoyed the heck out of watching him play.
Oh, boy.
You talk about a potential superstar. I don't think it's necessarily overhyping him to say that this guy is a program changer. And we've kind of thought that since he committed. But, wow. It's not so much the shooting. You know, when I thought about when you see some highlights of him, and, you know, this guy's just going to be a great shooter. And he didn't necessarily shoot the ball terribly well. But the thing that just blows me away is the way he can get a rebound, start the break himself, bring the ball up, the ball handling, and then finish the break with either a dunk, a layup, or finding a teammate. He was unbelievable to watch in the open floor.
Yeah, he was amazing. Some of that against some stronger, more mature teams may not work, but it was a thing of beauty to get, you know, either outlet passes on the break that he started after rebound, or just taking it up himself and generating offense from there. I think overall one of the things to keep in mind was we were playing European style rules on this tour, so we were facing a 24-second shot clock, which is 6 seconds quicker than the new shot clock for college basketball at 30 seconds. Having said that, the team looked really comfortable on the break, especially when Ellison was running it, which is kind of a weird thing to say. But this team is looking to play fast, and Ellison is one of the keys to this team playing fast.
And that's just a guy that so few teams can match up with. Like if teams are pressing and, you know, another team has a big guy matched up on Ellison, he can just bring the ball up. And then if, you know, they have to bring the smaller guys over to try to trap him, well, then he can give it to one of the guys who are supposed to handle the ball, like Dwayne Wilson or Tracy Carter.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to be a guy. He's just so hard to match up with, especially when he can bring the ball up like that. He was really, you know, again, small sample size, but in those four games, he was just about everything I hoped he would be. And he's going to be a game changer in this year. Like I've said before, Phil, you know, when we're talking about whether this team can be better than last year's team, when you add an NBA player, when you add a guy with that skill set, I should say potential NBA player, but he's projected to be in the NBA sooner rather than later, it helps. It makes a big difference. And he's going to be a difference maker this year. And I just loved what I saw in those four games. Pretty much everything. Rebounding, handling the ball, post moves, shooting. He didn't take that many threes, but he shot for 31%. Actually, really one of the lowest percentage on the team. Again, small sample size, 4 of 13. But he's going to continue to improve. He's going to be a good shooter. He's going to be a difference maker. So I was very, very pleased with what I saw from Henry Ellison.
Yeah, absolutely. And he paired up really well with Luke Fisher, which is,
yes,
you
did.
Know, something you want. And Luke Fisher and I talked about it. Now I'm going to go ahead and toot my horn. Talked about Luke Fisher and getting the off-season shoulder surgery and how
that was good to see. Yeah.
Yeah. And how he would look stronger when he wasn't worrying about the shoulder, and he's definitely 100% healthy. And he and Ellison were running the floor like gazelles. Half the time they were beating the guards down the court, which, you know, not knocking on Devontae Gardner, because he could move when he wanted to, but but this is a new thing to see our fours and fives down under the hoop before the guards get there.
Yeah, sometimes you had to crack that whip to get Ox down the field, Ox down the floor a little bit. But on just about every play, they were running the floor pretty well. You know, I think that's part of that. Maybe just comes from they're probably excited to play.
Yeah, that's
true.
It's
like, oh, we finally have a game to play, and I think there was some really good energy from the team.
Yeah, I think the only game that they look really tough or really rough was the game they played like a day and a half after showing up in Italy, when you're, you know, a little bit out of your element, you got a little bit of jet lag potentially.
Talk about
like
the first
that.
Game of the trip or yeah. the second of the back to back.
No, the first game of the trip. I thought they had good energy the last three games. The first game they struggled a little bit. They were still good and had enough energy to pour it on at the end. Went on an 18-0 run to win it. And the thing is, I wasn't even ready. I didn't need them to win all the games. Like I would.
Yeah, like the wins and losses were not important.
Right, they're not important, but it was more about what they looked like and what they played like. I think everyone on the roster will contribute this season. I don't see anyone where I went, Wally Ellison was, I don't want to say disappointing, the most disappointing, but I mean, he was kind of the player that, all right, he was what I thought he was. But even he, I think, is going to contribute some good minutes and some good relief off the bench for some players.
So I'm not sure what to think about that, because like I can't pick out two or three guys who I can say they're probably not going to play this year. But In reality, when it comes to tough games against teams like Wisconsin and Georgetown and Villanova, I mean, you're not going to be rotating 11, 12 guys.
Right.
You're just not going to be playing that many guys. It's probably going to be much tighter. It's probably going to be, you know, 8, maybe 9. So I think there will be some guys who will fall down the depth chart and probably not play as much when the games really matter. But I think that was kind of the point of this trip, to try to get everybody a relatively fair amount of playing time. And I thought they did really well with that. And the big thing for me, Phil, is they came away with no significant injuries. I was a little nervous watching that first game Hakkari, the team from Iceland, and they were slipping all over the floor. I'm like, oh, man, this is getting dangerous.
That's what the game would have looked like if we had played on the aircraft carrier against Ohio State.
Yeah, that's exactly what it would have looked like. So, yeah, that was a little dangerous. And that, like you said, that game was close because maybe they were a little jet lag, and it was their first game playing together.
Yeah.
But they had a great rally at the end and won the game. And then the rest of the games were essentially blowouts.
Yeah.
I mean, they really just kind of rolled over everyone else. And everybody kind of, you know, there were different stars of each game. I mean, the big guys really dominated in that second game against the Lithuanian team, LSU Atletas, I guess you say it. Maybe this, hopefully this first of two wins against teams called LSU this year.
That would be great.
For Marquette. And then, yeah, the last two games, they really just blew their opponents away. So they came into a groove, and they looked really good.
What was the single most important takeaway from this trip for you?
To me, it was that I feel confident letting Tracy Carter start at point guard, to me.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the biggest thing
for me is, because if he had gone out there and turned the ball over and thrown up bricks and just been a total mess out there, I would have been like, oh, man. I'd be sitting here today, it's like, well, man, I hope Cheatham can start at point, because otherwise we may be in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah.
But, he still has room to grow. I'm not putting him in the NBA right now. But Carter, there's enough there to make me think he can start at point guard and lead this team to where they hope to go this year, where they can realistically go this year. So that was the biggest thing for me, is watching, aside that Henry Ellenson is the real deal, the biggest mystery to me going in was, can Tracy Carter play? And I think the answer is a definitive yes, he can be a good player.
Yeah. Who do you think is going to get the most minutes on average this season? Do you think it's going to be Henry Ellenson, or do you think it's going to be Dwayne Wilson?
Well, it's certainly one of those two, I would think.
Right.
I think probably just, you know, when the game's on the line, a guy you're going to want out there much is Ellenson. The only reason I would say Dwayne Wilson maybe is because Ellenson's a bigger kid and maybe he needs a little more rest. But Dwayne is, a relatively, a small guard, and he's probably got a ton of energy, and he could play 40 minutes a night if he needs to. But I think game on the line, guy you need out there, guy who's so versatile and can do so many things, I think Ellenson's going to be out there a lot. But Dwayne's going to play. I think they're going to be 1 and 1A when it comes to minutes played, because, it's not like Dwayne has a ton of guys that are going to be right behind him taking minutes from him.
Right.
If Dwayne is playing well, I think Dwayne's going to be out there as long as he's not too tired.
Well, that's going to be the big unknown. I think Dwayne showed himself again, and we'd seen flashes last season. Dwayne was a dominant player in Europe and shot lights out. I mean, he shot 50% from three, 56% from the field overall. The question is going to be, can he consistently, night in, night out, be a 19, 20, 18, 19 points a game type of scorer on average? If we get that with the other pieces that are seemingly, coming together, I think this has a recipe for a pretty good team. I'm not joking aside, I'm not going to planning travel to Houston, but this is a team that could do some things potentially.
Yeah, the big thing we just want to know, is this team going to be better than last year? Are they going to still be relevant in early February? Because last year's team wasn't. And I think they should still be relevant.
I think they're going to be relevant. And this is maybe the transition into the schedule discussion. I don't think their schedule does them any favors, but I think they've got the talent to be relevant in February.
Yeah, I would agree with that. They have the talent to be relevant and win some games. And since you brought up the schedule, let's talk about that a little bit, because we haven't done a podcast since the whole non-con schedule was released. And, a lot of people have touched on this and written articles about it already, but, we'll just talk about it a little. Obviously, the schedule is disappointing, to put it lightly. Just so many teams that are at the very bottom. I think if you actually lined up KenPom and looked at the bottom, 10, 15 teams, all six of Marquette's bye games are in there.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, I did read the pretty good interview Mike Broeker did. By the way, Mike did a nice job doing color in Europe. I think Jim McElwain's job is safe.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think Mike did a nice job. But I did read his interview in Paint Touches about the schedule. And there were some things he mentioned in there that I didn't think of that were fair. Mainly the thing he said was, you know, when you're coming off a 13-win season, not a lot of teams are looking to schedule you because you just don't bring much to the table. So from that perspective, I understand why there aren't many or any big conference teams in there other than Wisconsin that Marquette chose to play. Now, granted, there's LSU and there's the Legends Classic and there's Iowa from the Gavitt games, but those are all games that were kind of given to Marquette, not necessarily games Marquette went and contracted out. But I get what Mike was saying in that interview that, you know, that when you have 13 wins, you're not going to be able to go to a Power 5 conference and say, hey, you want to play us? I'm like, eh, I don't think so. So I get that. But the thing that's disappointing to me, Phil, is that all those teams that Marquette got bye games with are just at the very bottom. And you couldn't have maybe swapped out a couple for somebody in the 200s. And I think you're really relying on the loyalty of Marquette fans to get seats filled in the Bradley Center in November and December, because there's really not many reasons for a casual fan to say, hey, let's go see Marquette tonight.
Right. After the Italian trip, some of the anger at the non-conference schedule is out simply because I'm giddy to see these guys playing again. Mm-hmm. But I have to say I am wildly disappointed with the non-conference schedule, and I agree with you. It's not even that, hey, why aren't we playing Kentucky at home?
Right. And yeah, that's not what I'm talking about.
I'm totally realistic. I get it. And the other part of this, just as a kind of a note, the other part of this is, you know, this is a bit of a nerd conversation, you know, because the casual fan probably isn't going to know the difference between a Grambling State at 322 and a Winona State at 250, and I'm making those things up.
Right.
They're not going to know a difference, but if you look at it, the bye games, we have 8 bye games that weren't given to us. We chose those 8 games. You know, because Wisconsin was a known, you know, like you said, LSU and the Gavitt games and the Legends, those were all given to us. The games we chose to schedule are all higher than 300, and I would argue lesser competition than we just faced in Italy.
Some of them probably so. Yeah.
Why?
I mean, wasn't Grambling the game last year that, like, late in the second half, we're watching, like, man, I just feel bad for these kids.
Yeah.
These guys are terrible.
Yeah, it was bad. And I get you're coming off a bad season, and you wanna be strong. But, I mean, they probably faced at least one of those teams has to be comparable. They faced in Italy. It has to be comparable to, say, Belmont. And Belmont's a 125, 130 team probably this year in RPI. So if you put 8 plus 300 teams, I don't get it. Like, you couldn't have gotten a 250, you know, a handful of 250s. And if you look at it from a number standpoint, I did a spreadsheet on this. I went full dork on this. But if you look at it,
you never go full dork. But please continue.
But when you run the numbers, with that bad of games on the schedule, you have to win at least 10 of the conference games just to be bubble relevant.
Right. That's the thing that concerns me is you don't want to go, say, 10-8 in the Big East and then bring that resume to the committee. And they're going to say, you know, where did you make up for this lousy non-conference schedule?
I mean, you could literally, the way the schedule shakes out, you could win 20 games and not beat a team higher than 80 on the RPI.
Right, and that's not going to get you anywhere. I was happy to see that Marquette drew LSU in the Legends Classic, because that is a team that has a lot of young talent.
Simmons versus Ellenson.
Simmons and Ellenson, that's going to be a big draw. Because I think that's why they did it, because they wanted to make sure they got Simmons and Ellenson playing. They didn't want to risk it of, like, having one or the other lose in the first round or have them have opposite results in the first round and then not play. So they wanted to have an Ellenson-Simmons matchup. So I'm hoping Marquette can beat LSU, and then LSU can be really good in the SEC, and that would help a lot.
Yes. Well, it's going to be an interesting night. You're going to build the other argument I made around the 300 plus, and you know, so the number stuff. All right, let's throw that out. The other part is, if you're worried about a 250 RPI team beating you, that you need to play a plus 300 team. How is this a team that, you know, if you're going to lose to that kind of team, how do we think we're going to go into Villanova and win in the conference right. season or whatever? Yeah. It struck me as a lack of confidence in the pieces that Wojo has assembled.
Yeah, and maybe so. And then again, I want to go back to what Broker said in his Paint Touches interview. And maybe when he's talking about teams don't want to play you, maybe some of those teams in the 200s do have that kind of attitude. Maybe maybe those teams in the mid 200s say, you know what, we don't want to play you. Sorry, you guys don't offer as much. If we're gonna go get blown out somewhere, we want to get blown out by a team that's gonna get 20 wins. So and so maybe that is part of it. And another thing Broker said in that interview was, you know, these schedules aren't necessarily worked on in once the offseason begins in April. Some of them are, you know, worked on a year, two years in advance. So, you know, obviously the schedule they had last year was inherited from Buzz, essentially. And then so now this year's schedule is essentially the first one where Wojo, for the most part, has worked on it all himself, or Wojo and his staff and Broker and, you know, all, you know, the new athletic department has worked on for this year. So, you know, they were maybe behind the eight ball taking over last year and then having a bad season. So maybe we may see an uptick next year. By the way, Broker did kind of hint that a renewed rival with Notre Dame could be coming sooner rather than later, would be great.
It makes sense with Bill Scholl as our new AD. He's a former Domer in their athletic department, so has lots of contacts there. That would be exciting, except if we lose, and then I'd just be beside myself. The only thing that could be worse than that would be losing to Wisconsin.
Well, yeah, but you know, that's why you play those games, is because you dislike the teams and you love to beat them.
That's true.
And you hate to lose to them. That's what a rivalry is. So hopefully that Notre Dame thing. But yeah, I mean, I still can't hide my disappointment in the schedule. I'm not going to sit here and say this is great, because it's not.
Yeah, it's terrible. And as a season ticket holder, I'm doubly, just as a fan in general, I'm disappointed in it. As a season ticket holder, I'm really disappointed in it. But it, you know, and to, like you said, to be fair, there are other. I mean, one, they're dealing with, they share the Bradley Center with the Milwaukee Admirals and with the Milwaukee Bucks. So scheduling,
and they will continue to share it with the Bucks.
Yes,
that's the good news.
Big news. We forgot to mention that. So exciting.
Yeah. But anyway, continue.
But you know, so dates are limited. You also have the economic factor. I mean, you could have a case where some of these teams, everyone else looks at the numbers the same way. So if you want to schedule 200 to 275, because that helps your RPI, but you got a good chance of winning, from a supply versus demand, there's only so many teams, and there's a lot of teams that want to play those teams. So they probably command a larger cost, and so all those variables play into it. I think what we're probably making the argument as, it's bad, but it's about as worse it could get. We'd like it to be a little bit better, but we kind of get it. And right. the other thing is, we're all projecting based off of last year's number. Who knows? A couple, you know, Stetson may find, you know, they may turn into some amazing team and they finish 202. Yeah. You know, who knows?
Yeah. But the bottom line is, you're facing basically, was it six, seven teams that are projected to finish last in their respective conferences?
Seven teams.
Yeah, so, you know, that's the bummer for me. But who knows? Maybe they'll really rally and finish fifth, and then there will be a. But I guess the bigger bummer for me is the Bradley Center is going to be mostly empty until January, and so that's the kind of for me is. Yeah, it's just because you may get a packed house for opening night against Belmont, just because it's the first game, and then you might get a nice crowd for Iowa, I guess. But there's no other games before Big East play starts that you say, got to get there.
Absolutely.
And there just isn't one. So, but at the same time, stars do bring out the crowds. So if Henry Ellenson continues to play like a superstar, you'll get a few more butts in the seats.
Well,
so.
I tell you what, if Marquette starts off like 5-0 or 6-0, you know, there's going to be seats just or people in the seats just because the team winning brings people out.
Yeah, so that Legends Classic and then the game against Iowa. Like, Belmont, if you win, and the thing is, Belmont isn't necessarily a gimme. But, yeah, let's say you get off to a really hot start. And let's see, Belmont, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5-0. If you can beat Belmont, you beat Iowa, and then you win the Legends Classic, then you're 5-0, and then you're probably going to be 9-0 when you head to Wisconsin on December 12th. So, yeah, if you can do that, then, yeah, you're going to have a – you know, there'll be butts in the seats, but I still don't think – even if Marquette is 8-0, I don't think they're going to have a full house for San Jose State on December 8th.
I agree.
The crowds will be a little sad, but – if they win, I'll get over it.
Yeah.
I guess that's my large point.
As long as the product's good, we'll you know, we've voiced our concerns, and we can now move on.
Yeah, so. I guess I'm ready to move on from this podcast. We've essentially touched on most of Italy, and then our, you know, I guess we've kind of hinted at this, but I guess there really aren't any expectations shifting from the Italy tour, are they, Phil, or are there any at all?
I don't think my expectations shift. I think the kind of, especially when the schedule came out, the downside concern I had is kind of going away. So my expectation is more confident than it was before. I haven't changed my expectation. I've just become more confident with it.
Yeah, I don't think necessarily my expectations for the season have drastically shifted as a result of what happened in Italy, but pleasantly surprised at what I saw. Think the team can develop, and hopefully they can get a few nice wins, and then we'll see what kind of damage they can do in Big East play. But, you know, we're a long way from that. But overall, very happy with Italy, not so much with the schedule, happy with Tracy Carter. And that's just basically all I got.
Yeah, it's a pleasant way to come out of the our summer slumber or our summer rest from the podcast, and to have some overall generally positive news about the program going forward.
It's just a nice little break in the dog days of summer. Then now football will consume our lives for the next couple months, and then before we know it, we'll be talking Marquette Madness, and I am looking forward to that.
Yeah, and one thing we should just highlight specifically, again, we mentioned it during the schedule discussion, but the state of Wisconsin, now it's not official because the city of Milwaukee still has to, the city council still has to give their blessing, but I don't see any reason why that wouldn't happen, but the state of Wisconsin has, as well as the city of Milwaukee and the outer counties, have agreed to support a new Bucks arena, which means Marquette will have a new home in 2018. And the Bucks aren't leaving. All around, regardless of the politics, I think it's a very positive thing for the community in general and for Marquette specifically.
Yeah, you know, publicly financed stadiums, there's a lot of opinions on that, but in the end, people love it.
Right.
You build something like that, you know, look at what Miller Park has done for the Brewers. You know, people love that stadium. They fill it up. I think it's great. I think they build a nice arena for the Bucks. I think it'll be awesome. And then if Marquette gets to play there, which they should, you know, it'll be great too. So I was happy to see it. Again, it's not my tax dollars paying for it, but I was still delighted.
Yeah, and it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be an overall very positive for Marquette, because they're going to be, I mean, it's a great recruiting tool. They're playing in a brand new NBA arena. They're going to have NBA locker rooms. It's going to be a great tool going forward. So I'm very excited.
So I'm doing the quick math here. Would that be like Tracy Carter's senior year?
2018 like would be...
So 15, 16, 17, 18?
Yeah, that would be his senior year, yes.
Yeah, so I would say Henry Ellenson, but I'm not naive enough to think he's staying 4 years. But the current freshman, that would be their senior year. So that would be pretty sweet.
That would be pretty sweet. Yeah. So, and we'll see who we bring in as a result of players that aren't even committed yet.
Yeah. Still a long way to go. We'll keep an eye on recruiting, see if anything breaks. Not really too much news in that department. But
who knows? We're having a podcast. Something could
break. Yeah, maybe there will be breaking news. That is the running joke in the off season. Is anytime we record a podcast, there is breaking news to date it shortly thereafter. So
should we check Twitter here real quick?
Yeah, I think, Tim, why don't you check Twitter while I'm reading off the social media contacts. Again, we always thank you for watching or listening. We're not watching. Thank you for listening to our podcast.
Nobody would want to watch us.
God, well, that would be brutal. As always, you can contact us on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF23. Crack Sidewalks is the team Twitter handle. We're on Facebook as well. You can find Scrambled Eggs on Facebook's where we post the podcast. You can find us on iTunes. Download us there. Take us wherever you go. And you can always just go to cracksidewalks.com, which is where the podcasts are posted. You can leave your comments, your feedback, your thoughts, your stories. Phil, is there any breaking news we need to slip in before we sign off?
No, it doesn't look like it. It's pretty quiet on Twitter.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear. In that case, until next time, everyone, seashells and balloons.